Welcome, everyone, to episode 368 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have a shockingly news-filled episode from the middle of October. Daryl Morey is no longer with the Houston Rockets, so we will talk about what is next for him and his future, what is next for the Rockets. We will also talk about Ty Lue, who is the new head coach of the Los Angeles Clippers, and we'll round it out with Dave Yeager, who is joining the Philadelphia 76ers under Doc Rivers. Before we get into all that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is a guy who was completely lost for an hour last night when Twitter was down. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
It's going better. It's going better now that Twitter is back, and I'm feeling a little bit better, you know, health-wise. But I think we should not talk any basketball today. Instead, we should talk about just the how it was physically possible for me, being sick, to turn that over to you. Because it sounds like to me right now that you are definitely on your way to getting what I had. So maybe this is, there's a Blue Yeti connection that just transfers bugs. I don't know.
It may also just be sleepy morning voice for me. I did wake up somewhat recently.
Come on. Yeah. Do you have six? Yeah, you need to go to the doctor for that if you wake up sounding sick, though.
Yeah, that's true. But you're right. We shouldn't talk about anything current today. We should just spend the entire hour on the GOAT conversation about LeBron James and Michael Jordan. So we'll do that, and then we'll do all the Morey stuff after. How about that?
Oh, my God. See, so you and I have joked about this in DMs, but we will actually at some point take this debate up, or not debate real, but we're going to eventually record an episode where we discuss the whole merits of the GOAT conversation, because I believe that, like me, you think that this is a somewhat flawed concept, right?
I mean, I just don't want to have these conversations. It was predictable that they would be happening right after the finals, of course,
right,
because of, you know, LeBron getting his fourth ring, whatever. And I think if anyone wants to have that conversation, instead, save yourself the time and just read Zach Lowe's piece. You're not going to do better than him.
Oh, I haven't read that yet, but I've heard it's great. Yeah. I have it on my phone. I just haven't gotten around to it. Is it really good?
Yeah. It's exactly what you would expect from Zach Lowe. So.
Oh, nice. Nice. Well, I mean, look, we're still going to have an episode like this because you have just forced me into having so many awards pods over the years. So you can give me this one.
That's fair. Well, Lord knows we're going to have a long off season, so we'll get into it eventually. But when there's news to discuss, we should actually hit it. And Mort, Daryl Morey is no longer the general manager of the Houston Rockets. He stepped down Thursday. It's being framed as a mutual decision, much as Doc with the Clippers was a few weeks ago. But he's resigning effective November 1st, but he will continue to help Tillman Fertitta, the team governor, and the front office in their search for a new head coach. So, like, what was your first reaction to the news?
I wasn't surprised whatsoever. I thought it was pretty hilarious to see Twitter when it happened, like in real time, that everyone was like, whoa, how did this happen? Like, are you kidding me? Of course, this was bound to happen at some point. I was surprised that it happened this soon to some extent, because I thought it he might help them out a little bit. And actually he does. He will still be on as a consultant for what, the remainder of the offseason or something like that.
But I
thought he would just like maybe complete the summer, maybe see if he could move some things around for him, and then he would like give it up to someone else. But, you know, my first thought was, good for you, Daryl Morey. Good for you. That was actually my first thought. I mean, look, I don't think it's fair to Morey to speculate on whether or not Tillman Fertitta played a part in his decision.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, you know, failing to hang on to like a truly great coach GM combo in Morey and D'Antoni, you know, who shared this great vision of positionless basketball, it's just not a strong look for ownership whatsoever. I mean, so even if we like really play it nice and go, well, we don't know if Tillman Fertitta was involved, we can still say, oh, ownership failed the ever-living hell out of this offseason.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so Maury spoke with Tim McMahon of ESPN, and he said, you know, the timing worked out for me. My youngest son just graduated from high school, and it was just the right time to see what's next with family and other potential things in the future. It just felt like the right time. I guess his two college-age children are each taking a gap year academically because of the coronavirus pandemic. So, you know, it genuinely may just be he wants to spend more time with family. And, you know, both Woj and McMahon reported he has been increasingly determined to explore what else might interest him professionally. So he might just have,
then
like, the Sam Hinkie
itch. Why did he sign a five-year extension last summer?
Get that money.
Well, he's not going to get that money when he resigns. Like, he's going to forfeit the last 4 years. I'm just saying, if he signs a five-year contract last year and he's had these thoughts for a while, why sign it?
Well, I mean, again, like, lock up your financial future, and if you change your mind and decide to resign, that's okay. But, you know, if not, it's better to be signed to a five-year deal than it is to be on a bunch of one-year contracts with a guy like Fertitta in charge.
All right, that's fair. I think overall this was just, you know, this last year, I think this was just him getting fed up with the situation. Like, if the Rockets had acted logically in terms of the ownership, and let's say they've won a championship, do you really think he would have left, citing those reasons?
No, I mean, this was telegraphed since the preseason, right?
Right.
Like, as soon as he sent that tweet about, you know, staying with Hong Kong, like, there was speculation that he was going to get fired right away because of China's reaction to the whole thing. And, like, relations between the NBA and China are just starting to thaw out. I believe they finally started airing the NBA finals on state TV over there, but they didn't air Rockets games all year. So, you know, and the Rockets, given their relationship with Yao in the past, were one of the biggest teams in China. So that had been hanging over Maury's head and the Rockets' head for, you know, close to a calendar year now. I'm not saying that that's the reason he's stepping down or Fertitta pushed him out. I don't think that's the case. I think, you know, Fertitta said right after the season ended that, you know, Maury's job was safe. It does sound like it was Maury's decision more than the Rockets pushing him out.
Right.
But I also agree with you that, you know, he probably did get fed up with the way that Tillman has been running that team. And, you know, I think the number one strike against him, I don't think Daryl will ever admit this, but, you know, we've been making fun of Tillman Fertitta for years about his, like, steadfast refusal to go into the luxury tax, especially when he has a championship contender team and he has James Harden in his prime. And then, you know, he frames it every year as like, oh, you know, we were just at the trade deadline and we were just lucky to get under the luxury tax. It's like, no, Daryl Morey made a lot of moves every year to get you under. It was not just a coincidence. Like, don't talk down to us. We are not that dumb. So, you know, it must be very frustrating for any general manager, not just Maury, but any, you know, any GM of a team where you're looking at a team like the Warriors who's willing to go way deep in the tax to sustain a championship contender, and you just can't fight fire with fire because your owner is not willing to spend.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, I think ultimately if you are an experienced executive in this league, the Rockets job would not have been attractive for you because solely on the presence of Tillman Fertitta. What's the name of the guy who takes over now? It's Raphael Stone, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so obviously there are going to be guys who haven't been in the big seat before who are now, you know, getting that chance. So that's going to be attractive for someone who hasn't had that seat. But good Lord, I mean, you have to be so flexible when you work with an owner like Fertitta. I mean, it boggles the mind how you can still have a functional NBA franchise. But as you alluded to the last time we spoke, you know, he could ultimately end up having to sell the team if his finances, you know, get even worse.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the silver lining for Rockets fans, because I mean, when you look at the team right now, Let me just look up their salary numbers and just their situation.
Gross.
It's really,
really
bad.
Yeah.
I did this Q&A thing for TV2 or several Q&As for TV2 over the past couple months on their Facebook page. And I got this question a lot. It was like, Mort, what team, which it seems like every team in the NBA is like has a really good future because most of them are actually acting pretty logically. Like most teams have gotten smart management now compared to like 10 or 15 years ago. So which teams do you see who are on the downswing? And the one team that just kept popping out to me, and that was even before D'Antoni and Morey were out, was the Rockets.
Look,
I don't think we fully appreciate just how bad the Eric Gordon contract is. So I looked this up. He has $17 million contract for next year. Then it jumps to over $18 million, and then $19.5 million in 2022-2023. And Eric Gordon is unfortunately very, very bad these days. Like he just not an efficient shooter, not a strong defender, just a nightmare on the court, and he's owed that amount of money. You know, some might think, oh, if you attach a draft pick or a young player, now you can get out of him. No, you can't. And first and foremost, the two youngest rotational players the Rockets had were Ben McLemore and Daniel House, who are both 27 years old. They have no youth what to speak of. Now, if they had kept around Isaiah Hartenstein, that would have at least been something because he's actually good. And he's one of those guys that teams should actually give it, you know, a flyer, by the way. And as for draft picks, I mean, they gave everything up for Russell Westbrook. They have nothing. Their cupboard is bare. So they can't get out of that contract. Does that mean they have to dump Robert Covington? Like, everything is just bad when you look at that salary construction right now.
Yeah, I mean, right now, their guaranteed total for next year is $123.4 million. The tax, you know, we don't know where the cap and tax line are going to fall, but the widespread expectation is they're going to stay flat at current levels, which means the tax would be $132.6. So they're going to have, let's see, they have 6 guys under guaranteed contract and about less than $10 million of breathing room. Like, they're going to have to dump someone if they aren't willing to go into the tax. I mean, Westbrook, Harden, and Eric Gordon alone are almost $100 million, just those three players. If the cap's 109, you know, with them and Robert Covington, you're over already. Yeah. So, yeah, the Gordon contract is very bad. And then, you know, Russ, obviously, is also very bad, which makes me think they're going to try to dump him, you know, to any team that's willing to take him. Like, he's almost certain to go to the Knicks this offseason. Like, that is the one prediction I feel pretty confident in. Like, the Knicks would be the one team to take the gamble on him. And, you know, they have the salary matching pieces to do it. And it's just a matter of, like, are they actually willing to give up real assets for him?
And by salary matching, you know, assets, you mean that they can actually just turn down some team options and have enough cap space to absorb him, right?
Well, they could do that too. But, I mean, you know, they could also just, you know, trade. Who cares? Taj Gibson, Bobby Portis, whatever. You know, it's one, you know, the Rockets will have him for 1 year and then
they would have to pick up their options beforehand.
Right. And but they're all team options, right?
Yeah, they're on team options. My thinking is, though, that has to be a mandate from Houston, though, that no, we don't take money back, right? Isn't that the entire point? Save money?
I mean, I guess they wouldn't necessarily need to take equivalent money back. I don't think the Knicks are going to have $41 million in space, even if they decline all those guys, though.
Well, I actually did look at the numbers, and because Elfrid Payton is also on a only partial $1 million guarantee, so I actually do think they can.
Even with the number 8 pick?
Yeah. I have to run the numbers once again. But I think they might. It would be close. It would be close. Like, maybe they can just attach, like, someone like Dennis Smith. Yeah. And then they would be good to go. So basically, the Knicks could be looking at that. But would, like, I just think if you're the Rockets, and if you work under these restrictions laid out from Tillman Fertitta, wouldn't you just want as much cap flexibility whatsoever? Like, because what does Dennis Smith give you back? Like, and if you get Bobby Portis, like, okay, he's another shooter, sure, and he would have been great under D'Antoni, but you don't really know who you're going to get in as coach. Like, he's not a defensive asset. Like, Taj Gibson is, okay, fine. It's not going to bring them over the top by any means. Like, if I'm the Rockets, and look, I'm going to get slammed for this, I'm looking at a rebuild, no?
Yeah, so let's go into that, because we'll go back to Morey shortly, but, like, let's look at what's next for the Rockets now that Morey is gone, because,
right.
Yeah, I mean, the financial picture is bleak. And even if you are able to dump Russell Westbrook and dump him and not have to give up more assets, because you're right. already out a lot of picks that you gave up in the Westbrook trade and then also for Covington. Right. So they don't have a lot to attach. And as you said, they don't really have many young enticing players to attach. So you need to find a team that still considers Westbrook a star or, you know, worth giving up something good in return.
Right. And that's not a foregone conclusion, I need to add. Like, right. that is, I mean, we cannot sit here and go, oh, sure, there's a team out there that's willing to absorb the contract, the full contract of Russell Westbrook, because let's just put it in context just how bad it is. So next year, he's going to be earning $41 million. The year after that, it's $43.8 million. The year after that, he's got a player option, which he is undoubtedly going to pick up because it's worth $46.6 million.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's his contract. He is not going to earn less than $41 million for the rest of this current contract. So, and they have no assets to give up. Like, is there maybe one team out there that'd be willing to take him on? Like, maybe not even one?
I think it's the Knicks or bust, basically. I mean, maybe the Pistons. I know our friend Duncan Smith has been joking about that, like some sort of Blake Griffin for Russell Westbrook trade.
I mean, I actually DM'd with Duncan the other day, and because I was doing a piece where I mentioned the Pistons and I wanted to get some info from him. And they are open to business in terms of taking on bad contracts for the, you know, for a compensation. So right. basically, yeah, they want to take on a long-term contract and then get paid for doing so. So I guess it depends on how they view Russell Westbrook. I mean, they have a new management team there. Mm-hmm. They should be smart enough to know, no, that's probably not a good idea.
Yeah. If you're aiming to dump Russell Westbrook this offseason, I think you have to start with the Knicks just because they are so desperate for star talent. As you said, they can create some modicum of cap flexibility. So, like, yeah, maybe they don't need to send back exactly equivalent amount of salary. They could probably get away with sending just one of those expirings, or even, who knows? You know, it should be pretty easy for them to, you know, create the necessary financial circumstances to make that deal go down. It's just, do they think Russell Westbrook, like, I guess the question for the Knicks is, like, you know, typically when you're trying to trade for a star, it's like, will this guy put butts in seats? And it's like, well, are there going to be seats to fill with butts next year? I don't know. Like, are fans going to be back allowed in the stadium? And if not, you know, do you care about trading for a star if, like, ticket sales aren't front of mind?
Right. And look, also, you know, I know we have a lot of bad apples when it comes to Knicks fans, but there are a lot of reasonable people there who would understand immediately this is a bad acquisition. Mm-hmm. This is not going to help us whatsoever. I mean, the fan base, the smart part of the fan base, is clamoring for a proper rebuild where you build through the draft and you make smart decisions with younger players in terms of free agency, in terms of free agency contract. This, like, trading for an over-the-hill athletic point guard who is all flash but no substance, that's not gonna sell, that's not gonna, you know, win over the fan base. They're not gonna buy into that. I don't think so, at the very least. So even if there were butts to put in those seats, you know, I doubt it would go over well.
Right. And to be clear, I mean, you've long not been a Westbrook guy. I've been higher on him than you have. I'm not saying Russell Westbrook is an objectively bad player. Like, put him on the Knicks, he would immediately be their best player. He would make them more competitive. This is just about production relative to contract, and, like, Correct. Is Russell Westbrook single-handedly going to make the Knicks a playoff team? God, no.
Exactly. Exactly. If he did, you know, that you could actually make the argument that it would be worth it because, you know, they haven't tasted the playoffs for a while.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the other side of that coin is like, okay, cool, the Knicks will have, you know, they could create a ton of cap space this offseason. They, you know, they could be one of the few teams that have it. There aren't star free agents to spend it on. Anthony Davis is clearly going to resign with the Lakers. The Pelicans aren't going to let go of Brandon Ingram. You know, Fred VanVleet is probably the best free agent on the market this offseason. And would he make more sense than Russell Westbrook, especially given the relative contracts that they're going to get?
Yes.
Yeah, probably so. But, like, does Fred VanVleet have the star power of Russell Westbrook? Definitely not, at least to casual fans. So, you know, that would be part of the calculation as well. And also, like, there's no guarantee that even if the Knicks, I mean, they would have to wildly overpay to get anyone, right? Like, Fred VanVleet is not going to take, if the Knicks offer $5 million more than the Raptors, he's clearly staying with the Raptors. So they would have to give him probably a max or near max contract to get him out of Toronto. And, you know, we've seen the Knicks, like, they went into last summer, they, you know, trade Kristaps Porzingis, clear out two max spots. They think they're going to get Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And what did they end up getting? A bunch of mercenary power forwards who didn't play well together. Like, cap space should matter for a team like the Knicks, much like it matters for teams like LA and Miami, where, you know, you should be like high, very attractive free agent destinations. But we've seen time and again that no one really trusts the Knicks to put together a good team. So cap space might not be as important to them as they think it is.
Oh, boy. So we actually started out talking about the Rockets and we ended up crabbing on the Knicks, huh?
Well, we can go back to the Rockets because so obviously a Westbrook trade would be priority number one if you're Houston.
Well, I mean, Eric Gordon probably would be priority number one because of the just the horribleness of that contract, but it's just not feasible.
I would think Westbrook is the higher price. I like Gordon's really? goes a year longer, but it's not even half as big.
Yeah, but even so, like I think you could at least argue that Westbrook, because of the factors that you mentioned, in terms of like the name recognition, the star appeal, whatever, would still cost less to get rid of compared to Eric Gordon, who you would have to attach, well, assets that you don't have. But if you just ignore that part of it, like it's theoretically, if you were to move Eric Gordon and you had a lot of assets to move, how much would it take? I mean, I would, if I'm an opposing GM and the Rockets called me going, so you have cap space, would you like to absorb Eric Gordon's contract and we'll give you something? I would ask for at least two picks, unprotected, because that deal is horrid and long.
Yeah, it would have to be a bad deal for a bad deal type trade. Like,
right?
I'm sure the Sixers would happily do Eric Gordon for Al Horford.
Yeah, that's true. Also because it's like $11 million less a year or something like that.
Yeah, and I mean, Horford is a year shorter and the last year is partially guaranteed. But yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be easy to move off of that contract, especially with, you know, COVID considerations. And unfortunately, right, that contract is only going up, not down.
Yeah. So you're thinking Westbrook because it's just the volume behind the numbers.
Yeah. Like the enormous size. If the priority really is to stay under the tax, which especially given Fertitta's financial restrictions because of the pandemic, I would think that, you know, moving Gordon would probably get you there, especially if you get cheap elsewhere. But like, you're still paying $82.6 million just to Russell Westbrook and James Harden. Like, it doesn't meaningfully affect. I mean, I guess it would. I don't know. I think just if you're trying to actually escape from any chance of paying the luxury tax, getting out of Russ would be the top priority. But my bigger question for the Rockets is, you know, now Mike D'Antoni's gone, Daryl Morey is gone. These are the guys who have kind of given the Rockets their identity over the last few years.
Yeah.
When does James Harden start getting a wandering eye?
Oh, right now. I think he has one right now.
Right? And like, yeah, should the Rockets consider moving on, as you know, sorry Rockets fans, in case that's a trigger warning, but like, these are the, you know, he's about to enter Bradley Beal territory of like, this team seems like it's going nowhere, and you know, should they start to consider getting out while they still can?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's not a dig on James, obviously. I mean,
right.
Just a fantastic offensive talent. I mean, I want to say arguably the best scorer in the NBA since Michael Jordan, but I don't think there's any arguably over it. I think it's pretty clear. I mean, yes. You have, as an organization, Houston has to make sure that they have their own priorities in line, and that is to build a team moving forward. I mean, they have no means of really upgrading that roster right now because of all the factors that we laid out. There's no young player, you know, waiting in the wings at all. There are very limited caps or draft picks available. You know, PJ Tucker is like 90. It's like, Eric Gordon can't play anymore. Russell Westbrook is only going to get worse. This is all just, it's looking really bad. And then they can do that thing where they hire some, you know, a high quality coach. Okay. And then they maybe duplicate the win total of last season. Fine. And then they get bounced to the playoffs, maybe in the first round. Like, to what end? Why not just look the reality in the face right now and go, okay, we are not going to have cap space in the near future to give James the necessary support that he needs. He doesn't have the necessary support on the roster right now. We don't have any means of strengthening that roster. It's just time.
Yeah. I mean, and if James Harden is on the market, you know, look at Anthony Davis as the template for what you can expect. Like, this is not a situation like Russ where it's, you know, you're selling medium on a former MVP. Like, James Harden would bring in a massive haul regardless.
He would replenish their cupboard.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not sure which teams have the ammo to trade for him, I guess, would be the next question.
Well, one team does, but they aren't going that direction. That's the Oklahoma City Thunder, obviously. You know, they certainly have the pieces to get a deal for virtually any player in the NBA done because of all the draft picks and young players, but they're just not going that direction at all, which is understandable. Like, they want to see what this can turn into in terms of a young movement. But, I mean, I think you almost have to look at teams that are in the playoff picture but need something else. I mean, I hate to go there, but it's fun. I mean, Miami is going to, or could have, a lot of cap space this summer. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot. Maybe they could absorb a part of it so you won't have to match dollar for dollar. Maybe they find some deal there where they send out, like, Tyler Hero, Kendrick Nunn, Duncan Robinson, Casey Opala, Chris Silver, draft picks. I mean, I'm sure there are more attractive pieces out there. But look, I mean, they might as well see what they can get in this package. I mean, Tyler Hero, I have to assume, has insane trade value as well right now. So if James Harden is on the market, why not?
Yeah, I mean, Miami is definitely one that jumped to mind for me as well. I was thinking the Nuggets possibly, but it's hard for them to match salary and also have any semblance of a rotation left. Like, I think it would have to be Gary Harris, Will Barton, and MPJ at least. And, you know, I know Gary Harris is not what he once was, and Will Barton missed the bubble, and they still did what they did. But, you know, I think giving up the ceiling of MPJ plus the at least, like, two credible rotation players in Harris and Barton, I don't know. I mean, Jamal Murray, James Harden, and Nikola Jokic, I would go to war with that big three, especially if you can bring back Jeremy Grant. So maybe it is worth the gamble, but I don't know. It'd be tough.
There is something else. There is one other team that could be interesting. The Brooklyn Nets are looking for a third star.
Yeah, that's true.
Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen. I guess who else?
Like, Torian Prince just for money.
Torian Prince just for money. That's actually not bad. Like he can definitely he's still playable. I mean, he didn't have the best year, but he's fine. And draft picks like Janin Musa as well, like, or Sanan Musa. I don't even know. Yeah, Timothy Luau Cabarro, who's on a mint deal. I'm not saying that's going to get it done, but right. I mean, we're in the vicinity.
Yeah, that's actually a good one. I'm wondering Boston too, maybe. I know they don't want to break up Jaylen and Tatum, but like if you did Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart for James Harden.
See, now you're just hitting on one of those buttons that I have because I love Jaylen Brown.
I absolutely
love Jaylen Brown. I think he's so much better than what people understand him as right now. And that's even after him averaging, you know, 20-6 this year with great defense.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy could be, he's going to be 24 here actually just in 8 days. But this is a guy who in a couple of years from now can be one of the best two-way players in the damn league.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to give that up. Like, do you shorten your championship window?
All right, Danny Ainge, you have to give up something to get James Harden.
All right. I'm just saying, do you even want to go down
that route? Yeah. I mean, right, no, it's fair.
If you're determined to get, you know, Harden, obviously, I mean, yeah, Jaylen Brown would have to. For Houston's perspective, Jaylen Brown is an absolute necessity. Like, otherwise, it doesn't get done. So, of course, I'm saying, you know, do you want to go down that route?
Right, I mean, from Boston's end. Yeah, because you could, I mean, like Boston's first offer would be Gordon Hayward and Marcus Smart, and Houston would say, why do we want a 30-year-old Gordon Hayward who can leave in a year? Jaylen Brown, as you said, would be an absolute must. And like the Sixers, I know, will come up, because they come up in every fake superstar trade, like some combination of Ben Simmons and Josh Richardson for Harden.
Mm-hmm.
But
I I wouldn't hate.
Yeah, I mean, like, James Harden and Joel Embiid. You know, I saw some saying James Harden for Joel Embiid. And it's like, first of all, Russ and Embiid absolutely hate each other. So that's a terrible idea. I don't think the Rockets would sign off. But I feel like if you're trading for James Harden and you're the Sixers, you're aiming to pair Harden with him, Embiid.
Correct.
Like, Harden and Simmons could be interesting too, but like Harden and Embiid are the natural complements. And then Simmons and Russ would just be like an absolute terror in transition.
I don't think you trade with the mindset of, oh, what can Russell Westbrook, an insert player here, become? I mean, you're just basically trading for someone to start the, you know, a new leaf, right?
Yeah, and it would just be so antithetical to Maury Paul to have Ben Simmons and Russ. There'd be no spacing. It'd be all mid-range twos because that's the only shot you could create. Yeah, but it is a tough spot for the Rockets to be in. And again, I'm sorry if we, Rockets fans, if you're listening and we triggered you with James Harden trade proposals, but just brace yourself because they are coming and they're going to come in waves until we hear that, you know, he's still happy in Houston and wants to play out his career there.
But I mean, one thing I think we can sort of agree on is the type of package that Houston would want to get in return, right? So we have to be talking about at least two young players and at least two unprotected first rounders. But I think you cannot just, if you're an NBA fan, go, oh, okay, we'll just find two random young players on the roster who are like 20 or 21. No, that one of those young players have to be like a Jaylen Brown caliber player. That has to be like a near or at least future, certainly a future all-star level player. It can't be more than that. And then that's why I was sort of hesitating on the Miami deal, because while Tyler Hero is certainly an attractive name, he's not, you know, he's not at that point where he's a fringe all-star right now. He might be in the future, and he might even be an all-star in the future, but he's not at that level that Jaylen Brown is, for example. So I think that's really rough parameters of it, right? What would you look at if you were Houston for Harden? Like, what's your absolute baseline for a return?
Well, I think that's right. You know, you look at the AD template as kind of your framework for this. You know, it was Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball were the two really high upside young guys, and then you also got Josh Hart and a ton of picks as well. Yeah. The problem is that there aren't many teams that have been, you know, getting the number two pick year after year like the Lakers did a few years ago. So it's, you know, there aren't a lot of teams with a ton of top tier talent on rookie tier deals. I guess Chicago, actually.
Yeah. But I wonder if they were even, like, I mean, it seems like Arturis Karnišovas is really in on building this thing from, you know, a youth perspective. Yeah. So I don't even know if they want to go that route.
No, it would make no sense for the Bulls to do it. But, you know, they have, you could put together, like, LaVine, Markkanen, yeah, you know, some package that would make sense for
Kobe
Houston.
White at number four. Yeah. I mean, that would get the conversation going,
But, like, does that make sense at all for the Bulls? No, definitely
not. No. And that was, like, the second requirement for the team that's receiving Harden. Like, you almost have to be an established playoff team or one that just missed out on the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if there's a deal to be made in Phoenix because they're young.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think they want to move Devin Booker for Harden.
Right.
Because it doesn't really align with Aiden or Oubre like that. So they're out. But and it seemed like Utah doesn't they just don't have the assets.
Yeah. I wish Orlando, like, I wish Jonathan Isaac hadn't gotten hurt.
Yeah. Oh, that could have been good.
Because then, I mean, they have a lot of pretty easily movable deals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could do some combination of Terrence Ross, Isaac, Bombo, or Eric Gordon, Markel Fultz. Like, you know, if you're Orlando, you call up Houston. You're like, take your pick. We don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could make the argument, you know, if you actually call them up and you say, take your pick, just see if you can avoid Aaron Gordon, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, Isaac, because he's hurt, he's going to miss the whole next year, and then he's going to be a free agent. Like,
That
just obliterates his trade value.
Completely. That's not what they're looking for.
Yeah.
No, this is really difficult. I mean, there is just no obvious deal to be made out there.
Yeah. Indiana for Oladipo and Miles Turner.
Yeah, I was thinking about that one. I don't think it's enough. I don't think it's enough at all. I mean, it's... Yeah, no. I was thinking of something else, but I don't think it's... I don't think the Warriors are going to split up the three-man core of Curry, Thompson, and Green.
Right.
But I mean,
oh my god, that would just that would be funny just because of how much Warriors fans don't like James Harden. So if they had to cheer for him, it's similar to Rockets fans this year with Russ,
right?
Where they're just like, oh no, I have to go scrub my Twitter history now.
But could you imagine like a deal centered around Klay Thompson if he's like fully back and. Like, it wouldn't be done now, but maybe at the deadline or something. I don't know. No, but that's dumb. They don't have the money for it. And, no, you're right. I guess Brooklyn, the Brooklyn deal I outlined is probably the one that makes the most sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do think Brooklyn's going to come up a lot in these star trade conversations this offseason because of the report that they are actually looking for a third star. But also that LaVert, Dinwiddie, Allen package, I mean, it's appealing. I think it gets you in the door for a lot of these conversations. And also it loses its value after this year. So if they really are looking to make that deal, they have to do it this offseason.
So what are, you know, what is the draft pick situation with Brooklyn? I'm going on Real GM right now, and it says their 2020 first rounder goes to Minnesota, but they have a 2020 Phillies. First from Philadelphia.
Yeah, so they have number 19.
All right, so they don't owe future first round picks.
Yeah, they learned from
that horrible. Yeah. Okay, but I mean, again, that's an asset. That means that from next year onwards, they can, you know, they can say, okay, unprotected 2021. Yep. Pick swap in 2022, unprotected in 2023, pick swap in 2024. You know, that's, you know, I'm not saying they should go that far, but they can do that. They can go that route to combine, you know, or to at least create a trade package of Dinwiddie, LeVert, and Allen, and then a plethora of draft picks.
Right. Right.
I mean, that's not bad.
That, yeah.
The Brooklyn Nets might legitimately have the best chance of any team in the NBA to get James Harden.
Can you imagine Kyrie, James Harden, and Kevin Durant on the same team?
That's kind of why I want to see it just...
But no one would ever pass the ball.
I know.
They would average 120 passes per game. And most teams are above like 250.
Yeah, but I mean, still though.
Yeah. No, you'd have three of the best isolation scorers in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the question in late game playoff situations is like, who's going to create your own shot? The Nets have the question of like, which one of our three guys are going to create our own shot?
Man, I think there's a Forbes article to be written about this trade. I really think so.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, again, it comes down to whether Houston is even willing to entertain these offers. But I don't know that Houston should be like actively saying we need to get out of James Harden by, you know, in the next 3 months. But they definitely should be at least quietly calling around and saying, like, if we were to trade him, give us your best offer right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And so I think you also need to figure out immediately when you call around. I mean, you need to have a strategy. Of course, always call dumb teams first.
Yep.
To see if they would just, you know, hand out whatever is necessary. I mean, but again, this was kind of the point of it, because like NBA teams have grown really smart over the past 15 years compared to where they used to be. So, I mean, you know, screwing someone over is not really, that's not really a factor anymore, I think.
Right. So let's circle back now to Morey quickly before we get into some non-Rockets news. Because let's assume, I mean, again, he said he might want to just explore what else is out there professionally. So, like, there's a real chance that Daryl Morey is just not in the NBA next year.
Yeah.
But
or the year after.
Yeah, but, like, let's assume that, you know, he gets called back to the allure of being in the league. You know, Sixers Twitter was set ablaze immediately after this news, because you know, they are allegedly going to shake up their front office at some point. You know, it's unclear. They say they aren't looking for someone to put above Elton Brand for unknown reasons, but you know, they are looking to shuffle it up in some way. So I think, you know, obviously Philly is one team that should be hot after Daryl Morey right now if he's willing to stay in the NBA.
Yeah.
Are there any other teams out there that, you know, jump to mind as potentially really good Morey landing spots?
It's a good question. I mean, I think you almost have to look at teams that are in need of a change at that position. And one thing that jumps to mind immediately, you know, Charlotte. Because it's still Mitch Kupchak there, and they have not gotten it right yet. I mean, you know, it's not... So we can talk about the development of Devontae Graham and identifying him in the second round. Okay, well, that's great. But sort of a flash in the pan in a way, or flash in the pan is the wrong term, but like, I don't think you saw that coming. I don't think, you know, Mitch Kupchak was like, yep, I totally saw that second year development coming from miles away. I don't think that was the thing. Then, you know, PJ Washington is a nice player, but there isn't really that star potential. I would argue that Miles Bridges is probably the guy with the most star potential, and even he has very limited upside in that regard. I think they could afford to have a drastic changeover in the front office and take, you know, a little bit, you know, more gambles, I want to say, instead of always going with, you know, this blue chip prospect from a certain program, blah, 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 like, because you're just not getting the star quality that they need. And if, look, we've seen, you know, what the NBA needs, you know, or the NBA teams need to win, it's stars. You need a top five player to win a championship. So for them to just keep treading water is not a positive sign. They need something else. and they need someone who wouldn't look at Timothy Moskov in 2016 and go, "Hey, guy, let's give you guys respective $64 and $72 million contract over 4 years. That's a good idea."
Right.
So I think the Hornets could be interesting. You know, Morey working under Michael Jordan and with the understanding that he's not a Michael Jordan yes man. Mm-hmm. Hell yes, that would be intriguing, and I think Daryl Morey would be intrigued. You know, this it's like a blank canvas.
Yeah, Charlotte is a good one. I was trying to think, like, because a lot of teams are either totally set in the front office or, mm-hmm. you know, teams like the Knicks and the Kings that would immediately jump to mind just change their front offices. I mean, Leon Rose just came in March, and then Monty McNair just took over for Vlade in the last month or so. I mean, that was really recent. So,
and the Bulls, could definitely have used him if the guard packs had still been active. Like, they would have been the number one on the list, I think.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's like Philly is the one that stands out if he's looking to join a team with like a legitimate championship chance right now, or like could have that chance. And I'd love to see what he could, you know, knowing Morey's wizard magic, he would actually turn Al Horford into a useful piece. Like, maybe that long desired Buddy Hield trade actually goes down as anticipated. But yeah, otherwise Charlotte probably is. I mean, like Washington, maybe.
Well, they got a new GM in place just 2 years ago, I think. Or was it 1 year? It's somewhat new, at least.
Right. Same with Minnesota. I mean, Gersan Rosas just took over.
David Griffin is in New Orleans, so that doesn't really make sense. Like, Dallas, I think that's Donnie Nelson, right?
Yeah, and he's just been there forever, and they love him.
Yeah, exactly. So that seems like there's something there. Utah? I mean, No, I think Charlotte. Charlotte makes the most sense. Just looking at for him as well, because it's not a big market. There won't be the immediate expectations upon him. Mm-hmm. And again, like the salaries are virtually all coming off the books, so he's free to do whatever.
Yeah, there's a lot of flexibility there, and you're not walking into being completely hamstrung by either bad contracts or bad players for the next few years. So it is kind of like a blank canvas, which is either good or bad, depending on, you know, if he wants to join, if he's like so used to being on the Rockets, where, you know, in the playoffs every year and, you know, one of the only teams to actually give a shot at the Golden State Warriors. And then he's going to a Charlotte team that has been in purgatory for a long time. It could be a change of, too much of a change of pace for him, but he could also see it as, you know, this is my next big challenge.
I mean, regardless, it's going to be interesting to see if he even returns to the NBA.
Yeah. And I mean,
Sam Hinkie didn't.
I know. Don't remind me. but I think it is, you know, worth at least, if this is the last we've seen of Daryl Morey for a while, I think it is worth giving him credit for all that he did in Houston. I mean, they made the playoffs 8 straight years, and I know a lot of people have been hammering this point home, and I want to echo it. You know, when the Warriors get KD and look like they're just going to trample through the NBA for the next few years, Morey was one of the only guys who was like, no, I'm going to actually try to put together a competitive roster and challenge you guys. So, like, we're not just going to coronate you. And, you know, they probably came within a Chris Paul strained hamstring away from actually doing it in 2018.
Yeah, they were close. Outside of the Cavs in 2016 and then the Raptors last year, I mean, they were the closest outside of those two.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I hope just for our sake that, you know, for the sake of NBA fans, I hope that this is not the last we've seen of Daryl Morey.
I would agree. I would agree.
I think he is just like a great member of the league, and his willingness to push the limit on, you know, like the Rockets after the trade deadline, I'd said it back at the time, like they were the team I was most interested in. And then COVID ruined everything, of course. but, you know, for those few weeks, it was just fascinating to think about, like, is this the logical end game for, you know, for Morey Ball? Like, just completely abandoning centers. And then, you know, now knowing what happened, now knowing that the Lakers won the title with a bigger lineup with Anthony Davis, like, how would Morey respond to that? Like, it was going to be one of the really interesting questions of the offseason, which,
yeah,
you know, unfortunately will not be the case anymore. But, yes, I hope, regardless of whether he comes back to the NBA or not, we wish him nothing but the best in terms of his professional future. But selfishly, I hope he does come back into the NBA.
Yeah, of course. And I will say, to your point here about him being an innovator, you know, even if the whole Morey ball experiment didn't work, I mean, you need to have innovators who try out new things. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, what was it? See, I'm so bad at history. Was it Thomas Edison who invented the light bulb?
Yes.
Okay. And was it, I think it was him who said, he failed 2,000 times, and he just said, well, I didn't fail 2,000 times. I just found 2,000 ways of not making a light bulb. I mean, it's just, you need these people, whether it's players or coaches or executives, who just think outside the box, because they're looking at the long game. They're looking at a game, they have a vision for something, and they test it out. I mean, Don Nelson back in the 90s, even late 80s, I think, was one of the first ones to really incorporate the three-point shot to like a very heavy use of it. And teams were like, what the hell? Like, they were averaging like 3 or 4 three-point field goal attempts per game. And here he was, like, banging out 15, 20 a game. Mm-hmm. It was remarkable. And that, in part, you know, played a role in where we are today.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, good on Daryl Morey for always being innovative, I want to say. And I think that's important. So I hope someone else takes up that task, even if it does seem untraditional, and even if it does force NBA Twitter to come out with all the jokes. I don't care. We as an NBA community need this. We need the innovation. We need new thinking. Otherwise, we just get stuck.
Definitely. So let's go to the Clippers now, Mort, because they hired Tyronn Lue on a 5-year deal as their next head coach on Thursday. Lue served under Doc Rivers as an assistant last year, so he has some familiarity with that roster and, you know, whatever happened in this 3-1 collapse against the Nuggets in the second round. Do you think Lue was the best guy for the job?
So I still am not entirely sure about Ty Lue. I think he has a great reputation, so I'm not going to sit here and argue that he can't pull, you know, some things off. I mean, he won a championship with the Cavaliers, but, you know, it's always weird to somehow evaluate a guy who's coached LeBron James, and then that's sort of it, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's LeBron. LeBron effectively takes over head coaching duties at times, so you just don't know. But given that everyone in the NBA seems to be very, very high on Lue, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like he won't be a good hire. I'm optimistic about it, and I think ultimately, you know, if the Clippers organization felt comfortable with him, and if the players felt comfortable with him, they're going to give him their all, and that's really what it comes down to. I mean, the reason the Clippers didn't move on this year was not because of a lack of talent. It was a lack of enthusiasm, lack of cohesiveness. So if Lue can come in and fix those things, I mean, the Clippers are going to be a pest next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think working in his favor is the familiarity he has with that roster already. He doesn't need to, you know, start from the ground up establishing relationships with players, especially
right
now, when I'm assuming, you know, when a new coach gets hired, you tend to hear like, oh, this coach like jet-setted to Serbia to go visit his star player. It's like, well, that's probably not going to happen this year, you know? So I think the fact that he, you know, is familiar with the stars, but also everyone else on the roster, the role players, and like probably got a pretty good sense of, as you said, the lack of cohesiveness is what undid them. And, you know, who better to have an understanding of that than someone who was in the trenches with them already? So that hopefully gives him a leg up in, you know, kind of hitting the ground running and having a foundation from which to build. It was Joe Vardon and Jovan Buha of The Athletic wrote a good article after he got hired last night, and said they had a checklist of five things that they wanted their next coach to have or to do. They wanted a progressive and innovative approach, a high-level game strategist, recultivate a gritty identity, empower and develop young players, and a fun and joyous culture. And they said in almost every quality, Lou graded as the best or second best candidate.
Yeah.
So, you know, was he the, I mean, clearly he was, you know, best or second best. Like, there are some things that he, that other guys could have offered that were better than him, at least in the eyes of the Clippers. But when you look at the full well-rounded package, it does seem like Lou was the best choice for them. And, you know, it sounds like he has a lot of respect around the league because he coached stars like LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love in Cleveland, and then also, you know, his assistant coaching experience, and he played with Kobe and Shaq. Like, you know, he's, I think the guys at the Athletics, the guys that said, like, he's basically played or coached with most of the big name superstars for the past 20 years. So he, like, he is used to dealing with that type of personality and ego. And, you know, it sounds like a lot of the trouble that came with the Clippers this year was, you know, last year they were, like, so fun and, like, the upstart team that no one expected, and they gave the Warriors a real push in the first round. And then you bring in Kawhi and Paul George, and it's balancing, okay, we've still got the guys from last year, but we also have to cater to these stars. And I don't think they ever quite found the right way to manage that, as, you know, Tomer Azarli was telling us in a few episodes ago. So, you know, I guess we'll just have to see if Lou can do that better than Doc could.
I have a fun stat for you, and you're not allowed to look it up.
Okay.
So we agree that when you think of the career of Tyronn Lue, like, the most memorable for him is him in a Lakers jersey, right? Like, when you think of Ty Lue as a player, you envision him in a Lakers jersey.
I think of Allen Iverson stepping over him, yes.
Yeah, exactly. But outside of that, you envision him, like, in a Lakers jersey, right?
Right, right.
How many games do you think he played for the Lakers during the entirety of his career?
Ooh. You're making me
think. I'll tell you as much. He played 3 years for him.
You're making me think it's going to be less than one would think. I'll say 80.
61.
Wow.
61. So he actually played more games for three different franchises, Atlanta, Washington, and Orlando. Yet for some reason, like, he didn't even play collectively a full season for the Lakers. And yet somehow, like, the vision one has of Tyronn Lue is him as a Laker, which I is that not, like, the perfect example of how the Lakers as an organization really is viewed? Like, if someone has been on the Lakers, it just seems to brand themselves in that way. I remember thinking when someone asked me about J.R. Ryder. Isaiah Ryder back in the day. The first thing that popped up was him in a Lakers jersey, and that was by the end of his career. Like, he spent the vast majority of that in Minnesota and Portland. So I just thought it was a fun side note. Tyronn Lue, only 61 games played for the Los Angeles Lakers, and yet, yeah, that's, he's a Laker in my eyes.
As Lakers exceptionalism in a nutshell right there.
It's perfect.
Yeah, so, I mean, I do like the hire for Lue, and who did they, they already got, Chauncey Billups is one of his assistant coaches, I believe, and then Larry
Drew
as
one
well.
I wanted to talk about. That's the one, because Chauncey has been ankle-looking for what feels like virtually every single job in the NBA over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
Like, he's been interviewed for, like, GM slots, like, head coaching position. He's just like, get me off ESPN or wherever he is. Like, I just want to work within the league. And honestly, some people might make fun of that, just, you know, for the sense of desperation or whatever. I look at him as, you know, being such a fierce competitor.
Yeah.
He just wants back in. He just wants back in for the perimeter of the NBA, whether it's as a coach, GM, whatever. He just wants to be associated with an organization and put in that work. I think that is a tremendously underrated acquisition.
Yeah, and hey, I mean, shoot your shot, right? Like, shoot. You're not going to get a job unless you apply for it. So
exactly.
If Chauncey wanted to get back in the NBA, like, hell yeah, go interview. I mean, as you said with Edison before, like you're gonna fail a lot. You're gonna fail more than you succeed in life, and you're gonna get rejected more than you get accepted. But it only takes the one big break. So, you know, kudos to him for his perseverance, if anything.
Yeah, no, I think I look very much forward to it. I think he's gonna do great.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, like Ty Lue, before Doc Rivers left the Clippers, was atop my big board for the Sixers. I thought he'd be a better fit than Mike D'Antoni, and that's with all due respect to D'Antoni. I just didn't think personnel-wise he was the best fit for the Sixers in particular. But it wouldn't shock me, honestly, if this worked out pretty well for both the Clippers and the Sixers. Like, this could kind of be a win-win for both teams, where the Clippers needed a fresh voice, but Lou still has the respect of that locker room, and the Sixers just needed a fresh voice, and like Doc, given his long coaching resume and his success in LA and with the Celtics, like he might command the respect of that locker room. So like, for all we know, these two teams could both be right back in the championship race next year because of the changes they made this offseason.
The Sixers, you mean?
Well, the Sixers and the Clippers. Like, I think the Clippers are, right back in the title mix.
Yeah. I just wanted to clarify whether you included Philadelphia on that list, and I can see that the great hires in the coaching seats for the Sixers have gotten you to buy into the Kool-Aid or sip into the Kool-Aid again.
Something. I'm just saying, like, talent-wise, they
don't fit. You're absolutely right.
Yes, but there is a reason that everyone picked them among the top teams of the East heading into last year. Like that, not to say they don't have holes to address this offseason,
we looked at them as a top six team in the East, and the top six in the East isn't necessarily like the strongest, though.
Preseason?
Well, I don't even remember.
Preseason, they were top two.
Were they top two?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were a popular pick.
Lower on them.
They were a popular finals pick. Like Zach Lowe picked them as his finals pick going into the year.
That I can only imagine, at least from my own point of view, that I had at least Milwaukee and Boston above them, at the very least.
Well, this is actually a good transition to the Sixers, because that is the last piece of news that came out on Thursday. Exactly. Dave Yeager is joining Doc Rivers' coaching staff as an assistant coach. Yeager previously served as the head coach in both Memphis and Sacramento. And apparently, Derek Bodner and Rich Hoffman of The Athletic wrote a piece about this hire. And the lead was, about a year ago, when the idea of him coaching the Sixers didn't exist, Doc Rivers was asked if there was an NBA coach whose X's and O's acumen perhaps went under the radar. His answer was Dave Yeager. So when I think of Yeager, I think of more like the behind-the-scenes personnel clashes that he's had with front offices, both in Memphis and Sacramento. But it sounds like his X's and O's acumen is actually pretty well-respected around the league. Yeah.
I can't blame him for having a dust-up with the Sacramento Kings, though.
No.
It's not on him.
No, I mean, nor can I. The dissolution between, it sounded like in Memphis, he and Marc Gasol, their relationship kind of got on the rocks after a while. So that has me a little nervous. Yeah. But
really, why? It's just like it's one person. There are literally billions of personalities around the world. Sometimes people just don't mesh.
That's fair.
Remember, that's why we fired Sarah. Just a godforsaken human being right there.
Of course. I mean, hopefully as an assistant coach, that will be less of an issue for the Sixers. But, I think if you look back preseason, they were a popular pick to at least make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, if not the Finals. And the expectation was, the spacing issues were always going to be there on offense. Like, I don't think anyone thought they were going to have a top three offense last year.
I remember us talking about this. We said the defense was going to be the major key. Yes.
Right. And it was good, but not great. They finished seventh in defensive rating. They needed to finish they needed to be the Milwaukee Bucks, who finished well ahead of anyone else in defensive rating. So, I wonder if Yeager is going to be able to I don't know like which side of the ball he's stronger on, but I wonder if Doc basically says like, all right, Dave, you turn this into an actually good defense.
I mean, look, when he used to work for the Grizzlies, so I have to assume that the pedigree is there for the defensive acumen. And I think that's a good point because, you know, we saw the Lakers win off defense this year. Like, yeah. let's be honest. I understand that they had LeBron and AD, great, great individual offensive talents. But outside of that, they had very, you know, little offensive competency from the rest of that roster. This was built on getting stops and getting into transition, because everyone in the NBA can score in transition, even if you're not a good offensive player. So if they get their hands on a league-leading defense next year, this is going to be the one thing that just can unlock Ben Simmons and turn him into a sort of Sean Marion type in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if anyone is arguing against the Lakers being built on defense, I know most people probably turned off Game 6 by the second quarter, seeing what happened. But Game 6 was the pinnacle of what they did defensively. I mean, Miami was putting up a legitimate offensive challenge to them for that entire series, and they just absolutely choked the life out of Miami in Game 6. And it was just a pure defensive effort. So, yeah, I mean, that is, like, again, the Sixers, if they run back this current core, they are not going to have a top-tier offense unless Ben Simmons develops a three-point shot over the offseason and Joel Embiid becomes much more accurate and willing to shoot. Really, that applies to everyone on the roster. I mean, you know, all of, like, Josh Richardson, Tobias Harris, Al Horford, all those guys need to shoot more and shoot better, which is the same story with pretty much anyone in the NBA. I don't think you could say that. I guess, like, Steph Curry.
You're talking yourself into this thing again. That's fine. I just want to tell you, a year from now, when you're going to, you know, come on this podcast and cry on my shoulder, I'm not going to comfort you.
I'm not expecting them to win a title with this current core. But, okay. Like, I do think there is room for them to get better, and I think I'm more open to them running it back than most people on Sixers Twitter are.
Okay.
Mostly because I think they, you know, as much fun as it is to dream of trading Al Horford for Buddy Hield and giving up nothing else, like, I think the cost of trading one of Horford or Tobias Harris will likely be prohibitively expensive. And I don't know that you should double down on the mistake just to get him up. Like, if you can find a better fitting piece for Al Horford, great. But don't give up Thibault and Shake Milton, the number 21, and multiple, you know, don't give up a lot to get off of him. Because, like, if you're just salary dumping him, it's not going to matter. You're still not going to have cap space. It's got to be for a better fit. And I just don't know that there are that many options out there. And, like, I am curious to see what a new coaching staff can do. Like, Brett Brown said this year, he did a bad job. He admitted it. He never figured out how to make Simmons and Embiid Horford work together. Like, we'll see what these guys do during the offseason now that they've had a year together. You know, now, like, Al Horford can have a better sense of, like, okay, this is how I was used next to these guys. This is what I need to get better at. Like, I need to be more ready and willing to take above the break threes, like, right off of the catch. You know, he was often hesitant and then has that long wind up and it just, you never felt good about it. Ben Simmons shooting threes would be the game changer, and we'll see if Doc can convince him to do that. But, you know, I think Jaeger had, you know, his experience in Memphis in particular, working with Marc Gasol and a shooting-starved roster should help in that regard, too. Like, I think the Sixers have brought in coaches who are used to working with the type of personnel that they have.
If they lose 4-0 in the first round next year, again, I'm not going to comfort you.
I will be laughing the entire way if they do.
The worst thing is, I know that you will.
Yeah, I genuinely find it funny. At this point, I still think the ship really might have sailed on this core as currently constructed. But Yeah. You know, I'm willing to make lemonade out of lemons as much as they can.
Yeah. So when you said the thing about Brett Brown, the one thing I was thinking, like, is I don't think anyone could really make sense of the Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Al Horford trio. I mean, I would be surprised if Doc somehow figures out an angle that no one has considered before.
Yeah.
You know, it's you're dealing with two shooters who, you know, or two players who can hit the three, but, you know, play the big spots, which you could argue is it best for them to take those shots. And then the arguably the most reluctant three-point shooter in the history of the NBA. that's a lot of spacing that's negated. That's a lot of, you know, elements that aren't really working together. So I guess we'll see. I still don't like the idea of having two centers alongside each other. I don't think Al is quick enough to be, you know, a four.
Yeah.
And I know positions are dead, yada, yada,
yeah,
yada.
Yeah, yeah. But
I'm still not a fan of that roster. I am still on Team Blow It Up. Having said that, I'm fully aware that hiring Doc and Jaeger and getting those components in place definitely means, yeah, we're not blowing up anything.
Right. Yeah. I predicted this as soon as they got knocked out. They were going to just switch Brown and hope that fixed it. Like, we'll see if they can go after Morey. I think that would change things potentially. But yeah, I still expect, I don't know. I just don't necessarily think it's going to be easy to move off of Horford. So I would not surprise me if they just run it back and hope a new coaching staff can figure out something more. But I agree with you. Like, I think if anything, if they do run it back, they need to stagger Horford more, play him less. Like, he's just going to be enormously overpaid for the role he needs to play. Like, he right. should be playing 20 to 25 minutes a game. You should be staggering him with Embiid as much as possible. You know, Doc said in his introductory press conference, like, I can't guarantee you who my starting five is going to be until I see these guys out on the court, which makes sense.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, Horford and Embiid are going to have to play together at some point. Like, wait, I'm not just going to completely stagger them and never have them play together. So
unless they actually do the deal that I suggested in my latest from Forbes, which was Otto Porter for Al Horford, Matisse Thybulle, and number 21.
Yeah. I mean, as I told you, I would not do that deal, but that doesn't mean they won't.
If I would understand not making that deal if Porter remains, you know, injured, because good Lord, it's almost been 2 years since Chicago traded for him and he's played 29 games. A healthy Porter, however, that could be interesting.
Yeah, I would give up one of those two, like one of Thybulle or 21, but probably not both.
Well, you know, you have to be realistic here. Horford has $69 million in his contract.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm okay not trading him, because I don't think you should be giving up two cost-controlled assets when they are so widely capped out into the future just to get out Al Horford and, like, get potential cap relief. What cap relief isn't going to help you?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's fair, but then you're just going to get stuck with Al Horford for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, two more years at least. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, on that depressing note, I think that is a good place for us to wrap up, Mort. So thank you all for listening, as always. Hope you're staying safe out there. Please remember to follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. Don't die, man.
Thank you.